On the Coast on CBC Radio 1. The federal NDP and Liberal parties are calling for a royal commission into the robocall allegations. In question period today, NDP leader Nicole Turmel and Liberal leader Bob Rae asked for a public inquiry into allegations of voter suppression phone calls. The story and the extent of the calls is still unfolding, with allegations of voter suppression calls coming in from many ridings across the country. Today, an SFU economist released her study on the possible impacts of voter suppression phone calls on the outcome of the election. Anke Kessler is a professor of economics at SFU and joins us on the line now. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
So little is known about the facts in this story. Why did you decide to study it academically at all?
I got to say, it was just curiosity. I was following the story, how it unfolded in the news, and discovered that the data were made available publicly on the Elections Canada website. And fortunately, I have the tools and skills to investigate this kind of issue. And I was curious whether or not there would be an effect that I could detect. And honestly, I did not expect necessarily to find something, but I did.
And how much research, though, has already been done into the effects of voter suppression and misinformation when it comes to elections? Is there a lot of research out there?
Not on misinformation. You have to understand that robocalling with deliberate misinformation is illegal, and so obviously there have been no studies on this kind of illegal activities. On the legal side, there have been a few studies on how negative campaigning affects voter turnout, and those have been largely done in the U.S., where negative campaigning is very widespread and common. And those studies find relatively mixed evidence. So there's inconclusive evidence of whether or not legal negative campaigning and smear campaigning affects negatively voter turnout.
There was something called the Barton study, which was an American test using a fake election. How did that work?
Well, what they did is they had a mock election that was set up on university campus simultaneously to the gubernatorial actual election that was going on in the riding, and then they subjected voters to participants in the study to this kind of negative and misleading information, and this particular study found a 50% reduction in turnout. But you have to understand, this was a mock election, and everybody that was participating understood that. You can't really compare it to a real election where people have, they have stakes that they have to think about, right? And so, it's not really comparable.
Now, as you say, it was your own curiosity that led you to study this. Yeah. You didn't know what you would find or if you would find anything at all. You say you found something. So what did you find?
What I find is that on average, those ridings that had robocalls reported in the media experienced a significant decline in voter turnout as compared to those ridings that didn't have any reported robocalls. And my best estimate of that effect is about 2,500 voters per riding in those affected ridings. The lower bound of my estimate is around 1,000 voters.
Per riding?
Per riding that did not go to the polls, but should have gone to the polls if there hadn't been robocalls reported in that writing.
All right. And did this benefit any one party over another? Because we have accusations flying always here.
That's something I cannot answer. I can only say that the turnout, what the effect of the average turnout is. Now, it is true that the research design suggests that most of those people that were prohibited from going to the polls were, in fact, non-conservative voters. So if they had all been conservative voters, I wouldn't have been able to detect the effect with the design I used.
Right. So can you say with any degree of confidence then that robocalls kept people who weren't going to vote conservative at home, kept some people who weren't going to vote conservative at home?
I can say with a degree, with you know, a lot of confidence that I measure that there is a detectable and measurable effect. Whether you know that actually occurred in a particular riding in a particular situation, I cannot. The study does not bear on this because I can only speak to the average riding, mm-hmm. which does not actually exist.
Did your study, when you talk about robocalls specifically, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the pre-recorded messages from a party, or are you talking about some of the erroneous information that allegedly went out?
What I did, I used a list that was publicly made available through the media about a week into the allegations when the scandal broke. And so I did not look at, you know, what exactly the nature of those reported calls was. I just took the list of writings as reported in the media where those robocalls had, or complaints about robocalls had been, had surfaced.
Okay. And how do you know that the shift in votes from non-conservatives to conservatives wasn't simply because people liked the conservatives more in 2011 and that's why they won a majority government?
Well, for two reasons. One is that I do measure actual bodies not showing up at the polls. So if people just switch their vote, this wouldn't be turning up in my numbers. So I can totally allow for people switching their vote.
Right.
So I'm just really measuring who did not show up but should have shown up at the polling station. And the other caveat to keep in mind is that I'm looking at the polling station level, so I don't look at the riding level. And within each riding, there are about 250 polling stations. And so each riding is sort of a little, you know, it's a smaller copy of the election overall. If you think about this, some polling stations have higher conservative vote shares than others, and they have higher turnouts and so on. And so by staying within a riding, I really can control for all kinds of effects that would otherwise I couldn't control for. Like, for instance, the winning margin of the candidate who actually won that election. Because we know, for instance, that if we have very close races, that will increase turnout because people feel that if the race is close, their vote matters more.
Right.
And if at the same time those ridings with close races have also been targeted, then I would pick up some spurious correlation between robocalls and turnout, both of which are due, in fact, to the closeness of the race. So by looking within the riding, I can control for all of this. I know it is intricate, but that's my job. And I'm kind of glad that, you know, I'm able to do it
Overall, what does your analysis say then about the potential impact of alleged malicious robocalls? I mean, does it say that ridings could have been won or lost based on the impact of those calls?
Well, again, I have to caution you on this, but I cannot say anything about a particular riding. However, if you stick with the lowest bound of my estimate, which is 1,000 voters, there have been, on my initial list, 4 ridings with less than that as a winning margin.
Right.
So if all those 1,000 voters had, in fact, come to the polls and voted, and the majority of those had, in fact, voted for a non-conservative leading candidate, then yes, the election in those particular ridings would have been overturned.
Anca Kessler, it's very good to speak with you this afternoon. Thank you for the time.
My pleasure.
You take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Anca Kessler, a professor of economics at Simon Fraser University.